life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, we'll give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Hello, and welcome to another segment of the Dr. Stem Show. I hope you're braced for this one this week. You know, as much as I try to find exciting things that we can talk about each week, I'm finding myself drawn more to, you know, enlightening people, giving people facts and letting people know what problems we are facing so that we can come up with some solutions and share some solutions that are out there. So this week, because I had about four parents that came in this week alone, two of them, their children overdosed and died. Two of them, their children overdosed, but they're on life support. So after having four parents walk in, I said, whoa, I guess we got to talk about this. What is going on with this drug overdose? So we're going to be talking about drug overdose, you know, today. I don't know if you're aware of it, but drug overdose is said to be the leading cause of death, accidental death in the United States, you know, right now. So even when a person survives an overdose, the event, you know, that happens before they overdose, I mean, or they pass away in the hospitals is devastating, especially when it's a child. So I'm going to talk more, you know, on the teenagers, you know, per se, because those are the ones that, you know, whose parents walked in my office. So I wanted to talk about drug overdose among the children. My Facebook is out there. I know I log on to my Facebook when I'm having my coffee in the morning, having my breakfast before I go to work. But every morning when I log on to Facebook, I'm already braced for the punch. I know what I'll see. Another parent, another family posting about their child's fatal overdose. Another family whose, you know, child left a letter that they're sharing on social media. A video, I couldn't believe this. I don't know if you've seen them. Videos from teenagers that they have left for their fans and family to see, and they leave a live video on Facebook. So right now, social media is flooded with pictures of kids grinning with their, you know, caps and, you know, graduating. But at the same time, you see another picture right next to that graduation picture saying that they passed away, or it shows them in the hospital with all these tubes around them saying that they overdosed. Needless to say, it is scary that, you know, we're having to face so many deaths and so many fatal accidents among children and, of course, among the adults as well. Well, research and all the providers that are around, you know, they're saying that it's preventable. And the only way that it's going to be preventable is if we, the mental health professionals, come out and make sure that we talk and talk and talk and educate and educate and share information with parents out there, with the children out there, about how dangerous these drugs are, as well as the parents to understand how serious this drug overdose, you know, time that we have, this overdose period, I should say, that we have now, how scary that is, and how every parent needs to be aware of that and to be able to be ready to be supportive, because these kids will need, you know, their support. So let me start off by talking about some of the false statements, I call them, the misbeliefs that people, you know, have, what we call myths as well, the understandings that parents, adults have on drugs. So let's at least, you know, talk about some of those myths and see what is true and what is not true. Because then once it's a myth, it means that it's something that is a false statement. So without knowing what the truth is, I think a lot of people are running around with these false statements thinking, oh, this is what I know to be true. So if you or your loved one is struggling with a substance of, you know, abuse, addiction or use, you've probably heard a lot of, you know, well-meant people talking about, you know, addictions, and sometimes you just want to look at them and say, you don't know what you're talking about, because then, you know, without having walked the journey, they probably truly won't understand. So myth number one, let's talk about myth number one. Myth number one, which is a belief that people have, they say, if you have an addiction, you just don't have enough willpower. Well, for centuries, addiction has been seen as a moral failing. I know from Zimbabwe, I didn't hear quite a lot of people talking about it. But now that looking back and talking to my parents, we actually had a lot of people that were overdosing on drugs and using drugs. But because it's taboo and morally not right for the family or anyone to talk about it, we never heard anything about it, because people didn't want to talk about it, but it was happening. So I grew up naive, thinking that it's not happening. So I hope by us talking about, you know, these myths and drug overdose, that you will not have children under your roof who are as naive as I was, thinking that, oh, it's not a big deal and it's not happening around me, because nobody ever talks about it, or I've never seen anyone, because it's happening outside your home. It's happening in the schools, and that's a whole different environment that they don't have any way of escaping. The common belief was that, you know, back in the days, that those who were addicted simply were not strong enough to overcome it. And there was something wrong about that belief, because today we understand it, you know, differently. There are so many drug abuse, substance abuse, you know, treatment centers around the world, that I hope that their, you know, line of people waiting to be served are from here to Timbuktu because of people accessing them, you know, because now it's not that morally, you know, I mean, quietness. People are talking about it. So that myth is out the window. You know, you don't have, it's not because you don't have enough willpower when, you know, you are addicted. Myth number two that people believe, they believe that detox is enough. So detox is the period when you focus on getting all of the toxic substances out of your system. You're actually going to the hospital and they take out all the drugs and, you know, anything that might be in your system. But then what happens is a lot of people that go through detox will have what we call withdrawal symptoms, you know. So I wouldn't suggest that, you know, I mean, anybody would think that detox is enough, because then once you get detox, you might be one that will have, you know, the withdrawal symptoms that are so severe. So a lot of people actually get into a treatment center where they can recover from being detoxed, because then they might need some monitoring from some doctors or not. So never believe that detox is enough. That's just a myth. Okay. Myth number three that people believe, they say rehab doesn't work. So a lot of people say, well, if you go into treatment and get rehabilitation, it doesn't work because you come back out and then you use again. Well, I understand about relapsing, but that myth is not right for people to literally stand on the, on, you know, on the fact that rehabilitation does not work. Because I also understand that some people would rather try to fight through their addiction on their own than seek treatment, because there are people that have come through to my office and said, I would rather do it on my own, because then if I go through treatment, I know that it's going to cost me a lot of money for one. Plus, I might not be able to go through with the treatment because of other addicts that I'll be in. So any reason of not going, people will do that. But rehabilitation does work. You know, it's not just a place that people just go in and, you know, staying there for some time and just, you know, pass time. It's actually an education and lifestyle change that will be taught in a rehab. So once one commits themselves that they're going into rehab and commit to change, they are a lot of programs that are presented in the rehabilitation centers that are, you know, helpful for people. That we have a high number of people that have benefited from rehabilitation, but nobody does those statistics, neither do they talk about it, that rehabilitation works. Myth number four, an addict has to want to recover in order for rehab to be effective. So I'm trying to think about this. An addict has to want to recover in order for rehab to be effective. I'm torn between yes and no on this one, because then treatment will begin when, you know, the person who's addicted says yes to, you know, to treatment. But then you all know that bring up the topic of addiction in any group, and you all may always, you know, hear people saying recovery only works if you really want it. And you really have to be open to it. So I think with that myth, you know, it is somewhat true, because a person has to really want to recover in order for rehab to be effective. But then on the flip side, there are people that are so far gone with the addiction that it has to be a forced matter, because now it's a matter of life and death. So we can't afford to wait until they say yes, because they're killing themselves right in front of our eyes, you know, slowly. So in that instance, no. You know, their right to say yes or no, will not subside in that instance, because then they're not able to say yes to consent to that treatment. And yet you can tell, you can see that they do need treatment. So that's with that myth that to me, I think it's a yes or no. Myth number five, medication during detox and recovery is just switching one addiction to another. I have heard this over and over again, because people say, well, you know, when you get into a recovery center, they give you medication, and then what if you get addicted to that medication? Well, in modern rehab centers, you know, pharmacotherapy, which is, you know, the medications that they're using, is a common practice, because they use medications in order for them to be able to treat an addiction and to take away someone from using addictions. They start to give you medication. So I understand that this might be frightening at first, and probably not making any sense, because then you're an addict. Why am I getting more medication? But then there are differences in that. One, you're being monitored by the doctors. Two, they don't give you a higher dose that you were getting in order for you to get high or to, you know, to use to get drunk. It's a monitored, you know, regimen that they give you, that slowly it reduces the amount that your body is expecting, you know, the amount of drugs that your body is expecting, and tries to calm the cravings down, but just feeding you just a little bit of medication so that the body doesn't shut down completely. Myth number six, rehab is only for rich people. Boy, have I heard this one. Well, it is expensive to get into rehab. However, rehab is open to everyone. The cost is quite expensive. And that's another reason why when I, you know, go out and do speaking engagements with children, to have them realize that it's not cheap for them to get treatment, you know, drug addiction treatment. And it's not fair for their parents to be able to pay all those hundreds and thousands of dollars when it was a choice for you to start in the first place, you know, to start using. So I can understand that rehab is only for rich people would be a myth that people say that. It's not just for rich people, but it is expensive. It's not cheap. And that's why we have health insurances. If you're here in the United States, health insurances that cover the treatment. So usually it's not a headache for you, because you have health insurance, and your health insurance will cover some of those rehab services that you'll be getting. Myth number seven, if you relapse after rehab, you're back to square one. Well, relapse is not a defeat. It's a normal, even expected part of recovery. So we expect somebody who's been an addict to have cravings that they cannot overcome and probably, you know, smoke, drink, and that's to be expected. But then what that does is we go back to working with them from goal number one of staying abstinent and see what it is that's getting in the way and why it is that, you know, they're continuing to relapse. So that's something that we deal with in treatment. But relapse doesn't mean that you're back to square one. It just means that you're continuing to heal, but every now and then, you know, the addiction cravings will kick in. So then what is an overdose, since we're talking about, you know, overdose, you know, for teenagers? That's what I'm going to focus on today, teenagers and overdose. An overdose occurs for a teenager when they use an excessive amount of substances to the point that it overwhelms their body. It's too much. Some overdoses are mild. That's why I was talking about those two other parents that came in, and they have their children on life support. It may also result in temporary discomfort, such as a hangover, or especially if you drink, you might have a, you know, hangover if you drink too much. But severe overdoses for drugs can lead to permanent brain damage and even death. Two of the parents that walked into my office, their kids overdosed and they died, which is unfortunate, because then by that time, they're so distraught. They don't know what to do. They don't know what they could have done. So there's so many, you know, questions. As you know, the teenage brain is developing. It's still developing. So when they start using drugs, it's so easy for a teenager to overdose on a single substance, you know, rather than saying, well, they used cocaine, heroin, and pills. They could even just overdose on one, because their brain is still developed. It's underdeveloped. So it takes a lot, you know, it doesn't take a lot for them to overdose, because their brain is not, you know, developed yet. So that's another reason why they need to understand that, because definitely they'll have a permanent brain damage and even death if they continue to use and overdose. Well, I have parents that have asked me, you know, how much alcohol does it take to overdose. There's something called the BMI, you know, when you get weighed at the doctors. So everybody has a different BMI. That means everybody's alcohol consumption will be different, and how their body takes it will be different. And I would suggest a question like that you ask, you know, when you go to the doctor for you and your children, or if you have teenagers, to ask, you know, how much alcohol will it take for me to overdose with my body weight and my BMI, so that they can, you know, give you an accurate number as well as information on when it is that, you know, you will have overdosed. If you drink alcohol. And then, you know, how many pills does it take to overdose? Well, pill abuse is common among teenagers, very common. So there's not a formula for pill overdose the way that there is alcohol overdose. Several factors are involved when it comes to the pills. Again, the makeup of your body and how many pills that you took at that time. So a teen could potentially overdose on a few pills because they are strong, the type of the pills that they took were strong, so they probably needed even two or three to just overdose, or they needed a whole bottle if it's, you know, something like Tylenol, aspirin or something. So it depends too on the medication that they are overdosing on, because whatever that is, that could take one pill, two pills, or a whole bottle and then really do damages in their bodies, and that could also end up in just not hospitalizations, but even death when the teenagers overdose on medications.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're talking today about teen overdose. And the reason why I wanted to do this show was I wanted to share with all of you parents, adults that have teenagers around them, some of the information that we have as far as statistics, education, so that you know what to look for, you know when an overdose is, and you know how to talk to your children. So looking at the research, as I said before, I was talking about the teenage brain that it's not yet developed until about age 24. So the problem is any, you know, thing that these teenagers do as far as using substances, drugs, you know, it affects their brain probably 100 times more than you would an adult person. So because also during the teenage years, adolescent years, this is the time that, you know, they take risks a lot. So they actually take risks, you know, that will end up in an overdose because they're just daring themselves or other teens are daring them. So it's so scary that we could lose a life because of, you know, dare, a game that they're daring each other. So it's important that you talk to your children and let them know that. But did you know, though, that teenage boys are more likely than girls to die of an overdose? And each year, drug overdose kills more than car accidents, guns, or, you know, everything combined. Research shows also that 50% of teenagers believe that prescription drugs are significantly safer than street drugs. Oh, boy. I mean, how naive is that? But that's where the teenagers are. They might have big bodies and show that they're grown, but they're not, because this is the way that they're thinking. That's the way that they think. Well, if I take prescription drugs, at least I'm not taking street drugs or over-the-counter, you know, drugs that I don't know who brought them, so let me buy them myself. Boy. What are the signs and symptoms of drug overdose that you can look for? Lack of coordination, slurred speech, nausea and vomiting. They might even have seizures or breathing difficulties. They might be gurgling or snoring during sleep. And I mean, we're talking excessive snoring, you know, that is going on, that you can tell that something is not right. So those are just like the basic of the things that you can see to say, you know what, I think I need to call 911 or an emergency number so that I can get help, because my child is not moving and they're not talking and they're slurring their speech. You know, they are throwing up, or they are gurgling like they want to throw up, and those things just tell you that, you know, something is not right. So as always, I say, as a parent, go with your gut whenever you see your children not feeling well, or there's something that your gut is telling you, then go ahead and confront that, prevent that, talk to them, and do whatever it is, because rarely have I come across a parent whose gut instinct did not tell them one thing and then they did another, and they say, you know what, I actually knew. And I go, how did you know? Well, my instinct. I just had this instinct that something was not right. So always go with your instinct. What are some of the popular drugs, you know, that the teenagers are using today? Oh boy, we have a slew of them. Alcohol is still probably a very easily accessible, you know, substance that, you know, kids can get. It's actually the most widely used, I can say, because of the easy access that teens can get in, or they can send an adult, which I don't understand why the adults continue to buy for them and then bring it outside and they get paid and they go. Well, I guess the answer is they get paid. But what a shame, though, to be able to pursue that, knowing that, yes, you do get paid, but you just bought alcohol for these under, you know, age kids that could end up overdosing on the same alcohol that you bought for them. Because what I know for sure after working with teenagers is that they just don't drink. They also will be smoking weed. They will be snorting cocaine. They'll be injecting heroin. So they just not drink from most of them in most groups that I have seen and worked with. So be always aware, you know, if you're a parent that says, well, you can take beer as long as you know you go into school, or as long as you get you don't get drunk or something, that you understand how that is not good for your child to be able to get it for free like that, and not understand the consequences of of them ingesting you know that much alcohol at a time. The other favorite, I think I touched on this a little bit on the earlier, is prescription drugs. Boy, parents, adults, even if you don't have teenagers in your house right now, if you have family, if you have friends that come to your house, please just start to make it a habit to lock and, you know, prescription drugs away. Because these kids are making so much money selling your prescriptions, for one, because now they sell them one by one. And two, it's a talent that they have if you're selling it, but you don't have to use it that way. And that's what we need them to understand, but also to help them by not making sure that things are accessible to him, money's accessible to him, that they can talk. Take okay, so that was the prescription, you know, drugs. So, oh, I know the other one that parents are probably not even suspecting, the cleaning products that are in your house. Did you know that these kids are even using the cleaning products and, you know, literal overdosing on cleaning products, you know, drinking them and mixing them with it, you know, with stuff and using that. So there are lots of, and what I'll do probably is also to give you a PDF download that you can download, and I'll put the link in here so that you can download some of the substances, some of the, you know, prescription pills that are dangerous, you know, for your teenager. That way you don't have those available for them, because that would just be, you know, dangerous for them to have, you know, that much access. So to better understand why maybe, you know, it's so key and important for us to talk about, you know, drug overdose, let me read you a story about a parent, you know, that wrote and said, 10 years ago, my husband and I were wondering whether we should be looking for colleges or rehabs for our daughter. Not the word, she was not taking a particular active role in college search, which a lot of kids don't do. But the culture of our family and her school made college, you know, the only choice that she needed to go to. After all, as a family, we all had high school diplomas and college level education, so she had no other choice but to go. She says, my husband and I knew that, you know, Mary had used substances in high school, confirmed when she was caught showing up on marijuana for cross-country practice. She also had a diagnosis of anxiety and depression, as well as ADHD. She was a junior in high school when I found out Vicodin in her purse, and I had no idea what that big red flag was. Despite plenty of counseling for her and our family, it appears that she was going longer in between incidents of her using, which gave us some insight as to how much she was beginning to struggle. So I'm going to stop there for a minute. What happens is, when you have a child that has been diagnosed or has not been diagnosed with anxiety and depression, most of these kids, what they do is, if they're not on medications, they self-medicate. And then we also have some that have prescriptions, but they still add on to those prescriptions and self-medicate as well. So it's important that, you know, you actually get your son or daughter evaluated if you notice that they may have some depression symptoms or anxiety symptoms, so that they can get assessed. That way you can help them prevent self-medicating, because they will have thought that nobody else, you know, is helping me out, so let me go ahead and help myself out. So here's the thing. This lady, this Mary, this kid, was also a kid that was in high school, doing well, playing sports, and the family didn't suspect that, you know, she had a drug problem at all. So mom says, during, you know, Mary's high school years, I thought she was going through a phase or being bratty or acting out. I did not realize how much emotional pain she was in and how sick she really was, until I read her journals after she died. I still wonder if there was any trauma she never told anyone about, but off she went to St. Louis College, where she transferred to numerous programs, you know, where she went ahead and did her nursing. But it was after living the dream that everything started tumbling down for them. She took a break, and then the parents discovered her overdosed, and then she came out of that one because she didn't, you know, die. But after she came out of that, you know, overdose, she started seeing a counselor. And by the time that she took her life, mom says she was on the roll with the treatment and everything appeared to be doing well. But she said in her journal, "I'm a heroin addict," is what she wrote in her journal. And mom did not know or find out before she had died. She found out after she had died and flipped through the pages and realized that she says, "I'm an addict." So here's what happens with addicts, as well as, you know, we talked about suicide. There's always warning signs that you can see that something is not right. They write something, they say something. There's always a warning sign. So that myth that parents say, you know, I mean, not parents, that teenagers say, "Well, I want my privacy." Parents, adults out there, sometimes if you are suspecting something is not right, then please snoop in and read, because you don't want to be like this mom that finally got the permission to read through the journal and realize that their daughter was still having problems and was struggling and needed their help, but they didn't know how to help because they were not asked to help and the daughter was not open for them to help. So it's one thing that I would urge you as a parent, if your gut instinct says, "Let me check," then go ahead and check. Are they going to scream, kick, and yell? Yes, they will scream, kick, and yell. But here's the thing. They are under your roof and not on your watch will they decide to overdose. And then you get to live with that, you know, guilt of not having done something. So I err to the caution of, you know, being safe than avoiding this bitterness and screaming and yelling that they do, because then at some point you definitely will get an opportunity to explain to them why you did what you did, you know. So what parents should also know is that teenagers will not openly come and talk to you about, "Oh, I have a drug problem and I'm struggling with this." They won't. And I mean, for obvious reasons, they don't want to disappoint you. But then at the same time, they don't want to be judged that they made a mistake and they continued using until now it becomes a disease and they're not able to control it anymore. Neither are they able to control themselves from not using, to stop themselves from not using. So it's a cycle that we can, you know, stop right there at the beginning when we see it. It's a cycle that we can educate our kids and, you know, talk to them about drug overdose and the seriousness, you know, of it. Because with knowledge is power. And most teenagers, I don't want to lie, we also have a whole lot that are doing well, that things have worked out well, you know, in their lives. If you know a parent or know a teenager that is doing well like that, talk to your son or daughter and say, "Hey, I think so-and-so would be great, more, you know, more mentor for you. Have you ever started talking to them? You know, I mean, do you want me to help you to connect with them so that they connect with positive people and positive influence?" Boys and girls clubs, those are underutilized these days. I don't think a lot of people take their kids there, you know, to have a mentor, a big sister and a big brother. So we used to have those programs. I'm not quite sure if they're still in the community, the big boys and, you know, girls programs. But you certainly can find a mentor by yourself as well if you see a well-rounded young person, or talk to the teachers and ask the teachers. That's what I would do. Ask the teachers and say, "Do you have any recommendations of anyone that can be a mentor to my daughter or to my son?" That way they don't, you know, your children are not going through the high school years and, you know, alone and feeling lonely. because that is one of those big reasons why they resort to using drugs, because they feel alone and they feel lonely. So you might ask, why do these kids use, you know, drugs? Why are we having a high number of them using drugs? Well, the first number one reason that I know for sure, even based on research, is because they might have psychological conditions such as depression, anxiety, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorders that are not treated. And as a result, because they're not treated, they find themselves, you know, they find themselves taking something or, you know, using as well. If they are living in a family of users, they're definitely going to start experimenting and using as well. So living in a home that is also a home that parents are constantly fighting and arguing with each other sends, you know, teenagers to resort to smoking and being high so that I'm not a part of it and I'm not hearing it and I'm not, you know, understanding it. People that have an eating disorder, they also tend to resort to using so that they don't get to feel their bodies or, you know, feel the pain of having to regurgitate the food that they are taking. So they might resort to using as well. The lack of parental supervision, with parents working these days and not being home, that drives kids to using. It's not an excuse, but those are the reasons why, you know, they enjoy the thrill of using and the thrill of sneaking when mommy's not home, because, you know, there's no adult, you know, that is at home. So be aware of that and just look around your home and see, you know, what the environment is like in your home. Is it peaceful enough? Is it chaotic that you think that your teenager could be using? Because then that's how it starts, little by little, until, unfortunately, they overdose.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
So as a parent, what should you do? How can you help? The first thing that I would suggest that you do as a parent is to know the facts. As I said, I'm adding on a PDF that will list a whole lot of the drugs so that you understand what the type of the drugs are. What I'll send you, what I'll have for you, is what we call a schedule of drugs. What it does is it has the drugs put in different categories so that you understand the effectiveness and which drug is under what category, so that you can understand them more. So know the facts. Know the different types of drugs and their street names, because each of these drugs, they have a street name for it that they might say right under your nose and you have no idea what they just said. Also, know what each drug and any associated, you know, if you know what picture or view of what they look like, you know, be familiar with that, of what each drug looks like, smells like, so that you're aware. Don't be like me, you know, the first time that I had a smell of marijuana, I didn't even know that that was marijuana, but all I knew was something was smelling like a cigar or something that was just deep. And, you know, people that were around me laughed and they said, "What? You don't know the smell of marijuana?" I didn't know. I didn't know that smell. And because I was only exposed to it for this a few, you know, of those seconds, if I were to get in again, all I know is this is stench that is just smells so bad that probably that's the only way that I'll know that that's it. So, but familiarize yourself with it so that if a kid comes in and you smell it, then you know that they are high because they've been smoking. Also, what you want to learn are the physical and behavioral signs of drug abuse. I again have them in the download, so you'll have those in the download as well so that you can see, but familiarize yourself with them, because it's very helpful when you tend to get to, you know, see your child and know what's going on with them. You know, also know where to get help in your area. The information that I'll have will be general information for places that you can go, but in each city you have places that you could go that has resources. If not, if you don't know, then my suggestion is you speak to your child physician or your physician per se. They'll give you some resources that are in your area, but after knowing the facts so that you're well prepared. I wouldn't wait until something happens to find where do I go for an emergency, where do I go for an assessment, and you know, what numbers can I call for them and what are the addresses. I would keep all that, you know, tucked away in your resource book so that if it happens and you need it, you're not panicking, you already know where the places are. Help your teens, help your teenagers to say no. The temptation is very, very high. I mean, literally, probably from seventh grade on, these kids are like, you know, 9, 10 years old, and they're being lured into using drugs, smoking, because the other kids that are influencing them are also coming from environments that, you know, are accepting all of that use, or probably the parents don't even know because they are using themselves. But then, let's say, you know, do some role playing with your kid, because then sometimes I don't think we laugh enough with the kids. I don't think we play enough with them. So this one will be one of those, you know, plays that you can do a role play with, you know, your teenager. So his friends comes and says, come on, dude, you love the buzz from this stuff. It's kicking, man. You don't even feel it, but it is good. What you want to do is teach your child to be firm with the no thanks. And once they say no thanks, to start walking and getting away from that environment. Because we need to encourage them not to be timid, or to not have the confidence to say even to a friend, to a best friend, that a no is a no is a no, and it's no thanks. So always have them, you know, prepare, you know, with that, because then sometimes the kids will be so persistent. Oh, come on, you won't even die with this. It's not a killer stuff, you know. I mean, just one snort, or just one pull. I mean, they can be so persistent. So your child needs to be very strong, but needs your support in order to, you know, be that strong, because the temptation is, I mean, it's real, because then you're surrounded with all your friends and everybody that's using, and you're the only one sometimes that's not using. And sometimes they say everybody else is, but you're the only one. And then, you know, they push you into doing that. So that's why I'm saying they need your support, and I'm glad that you'll be listening to this. Warn your children as well, because I don't think that, well, because of the age again, their brain is not, you know, wired sometimes to reason. Because then I always say to the girls, you can be taken to these parties and everything, and then you're smoking. What if they take advantage of you and rape you? And up until it's done, of course, it goes through one ear and out the other ear. But don't cease to say something anyway. Don't cease to train your child so that they know when to say no, when to walk away, and what, you know, or what to expect, because then we do have quite a significant amount of young women that are being raped under the influence when they've been using, and then they use again after they wake up, which results in overdoses. So there's so many stories. Sometimes I don't believe them myself when I'm sitting in that office and I get to hear a parent coming in, and then I talk to their child, and some of the stuff that I'm hearing, I'm going, huh? What world are you living in? Guess what? It is the same world as we are living. And until we can better support them and learn as much as we can on this drug addict, we will be losing more and more kids to overdose. Because, you know, the urgency is real, and these kids really don't know what to do, and they're trying. Because then once you, if you can, you know, just not start, and then you start, you try it, it becomes a disease now, because now they can't control it. They literally cannot control it on their own. So depending, you know, on your child, how long they've been, you know, using, what they've been, what type of drug they've been using, it probably would definitely, you know, take them some time to detox and treat them, but they would need treatment. Otherwise, they're going to continue to self-medicate. So I also want to be able to talk a little bit about some of the mistakes that parents, you know, make, especially, you know, raising today's teenagers, because I don't think they even understand sometimes how big, you know, drug use is and how prevalent it is. Because 1 in 10 kids that are ages 12 to 17 years of age are currently using, or they have tried using, you know, drugs. And this has been research that has been done, you know, ever since I think the first, you know, set of research came out in 2009, and they just did another one in 2015. And it says that between ages 12 and 17, but actually I even saw some that had 10 years old, you know, starting to use. So it is something that is prevalent, that we need to understand that it's happening. But here are some of the mistakes that parents make. Mistake number one, failing to set expectations. These teenagers are smart. They know their parents, you know, disapprove of their drug use. But then if there's nothing, you know, that is set in stone of what the expectations are and everything, they just do what they want and, you know, use when they want to, try when they want to, because they know set boundaries that they know of what their parents are expecting. So set expectations so that they know what's expected and what's not expected in your family. Another mistake that, you know, parents make is ignoring mental health issues. As I said earlier on, remember that some of the kids that use have a diagnosed or non-diagnosed depression, anxiety, or some mental health, you know, problem, attention deficit eating disorders that have not been diagnosed. So you don't want to ignore those if you notice that your child is suffering or struggling from those, or you just don't know what it is. It's okay to just call in a doctor or a therapist to go in for an assessment so that they can tell you what it is. Mistake number three is assuming that just to experiment with drugs is not a big deal. And I know there are parents that are comfortable with smoking with their child just so they can experience it and, you know what it is like to smoke, or they can drink with their children so that they know what it is to drink. So it's a big deal. Doing those things is a big deal, because as I said again, depending on how the BMI, body mass index of your child, if they're petite, then that first, you know, use could trigger further use. That first drink could trigger further, you know, drinking problem, because their body is not fully developed, brain is not, but they drank a little bit with you at home and say, it's something that I want to do, because now the body has tested it. So that's a mistake. Another mistake, number four, is being dishonest about your own drug use. If you are using drugs, these children, I tell you, I call them the generation do as I do, not as I say. So they're watching more of what their parents are doing than what they, you know, their parents are saying. So, you know, you can't lie to them that you're not using when you're using, because they can see it, they know it, they smell it, but they see how you are, that they know. They know what they know. Mistake number six is parents become, you know, judgmental sometimes with these kids. And when you're talking to your kid and you're being judgmental and they say it's that you're being too critical, maybe critical is the word, critical. Guess what? They take it to heart. They don't have the backbone that most parents think these kids have. They don't have the backbone to take it. And most of the time, once they go through, you know, that judgment or that criticism, it just sends them to drink, smoke more for some reason. The other mistake that parents, you know, make is not noticing the positive changes in their teenager. So, you know, if you're not telling them the good things that you're seeing them do, reinforcing those behaviors really, you know, can be a big mistake for the parents. The other big mistake is for parents who do not notice some major changes in their child's sleep, mood, their friends, their academic performance, their weight. Because I'll never forget this, where a child came and told me when I was working with, you know, teenagers in a high school in Boston, Massachusetts, and said, "Ma'am, I haven't seen my mom in probably a month." And I said, "What do you mean you haven't seen your mom for in probably a month?" Because she was a single parent. And he says, "When she comes home, I'm in my room. When I leave to come to school, she's still sleeping. So I never get to see her. So, you know, usually I'll say, 'Morning, Ma. How you doing, Ma?' And then she says the same thing, 'Bye, bye.'" So with that, you miss to notice the changes that are going on in your child. So as much as you can, if you're a parent that is working maybe different hours than your child and you're at home different times, or you're sleeping when they're awake, try as much as you can to coordinate somewhere, somehow, where you can take a look at them and just observe them so that you can see the changes in them. The other mistake that parents make is putting off getting help. You realize that your child might be needing help. Maybe they are now already drinking too much or drugging too much, and you can tell that it's excessive. Or maybe they haven't started, but you're starting to see a pattern that is going on with them, that something is not right. So once you notice those, please dial for help as soon as you can. Because there was another recent survey that was done that said 2 million children between the ages of 12 and 17 need treatment for a substance abuse problem. That is a large number, 2 million children that do need treatment. So it's not even, you know, about 150,000, I think the research said, of the ones that get the treatment, but the rest of them don't. So guess what? The rest of them, among those 2 million that needed help, they now drinking, drugging, and doing anything that they can to make sure that they can, you know, subside the pain that they have due to their mental illness. The other mistake that parents make is not talking about drugs. So if it's a taboo topic that nobody talks about it and everybody's doing their own thing in that house, that's when sometimes they just get away with it. In fact, they don't get away with it. They just do it right there and then. And, you know, you can see that my child is drinking, drugging, and, you know, using substances. But the excessiveness, you know, of their use is what usually will wake up the parents. But by that time, most, you know, wake up when a kid has already overdosed. So most of the time, I think the number one thing is to be alert and making sure that you notice all the changes that are going on, you know, with your child. The other mistake that parents make is not locking your medicine cabinets and not locking your cleaning supplies. Please, please. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many of these kids find the drugs right there under your nose, and they use that, you know, what's in your house. So overall, what can you do? Set high expectations and clear limits. You know, talk to your child about your values. Talk to your child about, you know, your family, your expectations of them. Connect with them, you know, be able to talk about their future with them, so that, you know what, they have something to hold on to when that temptation comes. Talk to them about the dangers of drug use. When you download the handouts that I have, you know, with this, you know, share with them. Help them handle peer pressure whenever they break up with someone, when somebody hurts them, they get, you know, bullied on Facebook, or somebody just says something that is not true about them. Help them handle those pressures, because that's what sends them down, you know, spiral down to using drugs. Help them deal with emotions, you know, their healthy ways of expressing themselves and their unhealthy ways of expressing themselves. But most of them choose not to even express themselves and choose to just use substances. Set a good example as a parent. So that means, you know, if you were using yourself or drinking yourself, and, you know, I mean, your child is seeing that, if you're going to help them out, then you need to try and, you know, get help and avoid using, you know, any of the substances or illegal drugs in front of them or around them, or even using at all, I should say, because then that will help them, you know, to not use or to stop using. Get professional help at all times. Ask professionals for help. Prevention starts with you as a parent, and your children are depending on you. There's so much to talk about drugs. But as a parent, I have to say to you, parents are powerful. Your influence is even, you know, I mean, more important than any professional influence can give to your child. So never lose hope. Don't give up hope. You be the first person to do the role modeling, to check on your child, to make sure that you get them treatment evaluations for any mental illness that they might be going through before they start using, because that could be what's going on, that they'll be self-medicating. I have enjoyed talking to you once again this week. Have a great week, and we will connect again next week. As I always say, this is Dr. Stem. Be encouraged and encouraging.